Welcome to another Principle of Hospitality podcast. I'm your host, Sean DeVries. As always, thanks so much for tuning in. Now, food brings people together and promotes community, and Principle of Hospitality is here to disrupt current perceptions of what the hospitality industry can achieve in today's ever-evolving and challenging environment. And now that's why we've partnered with Chef's Hat, the largest family-owned and operated hospitality supplier in Australia, for this season of Poe. Our next guest, Christy Tanya, is the owner and head chef of Glace Dessert Artisanal, born and bred in Melbourne, and has grown to incorporate two stores with an international influence showing through its techniques. They believe in transparency throughout all their ingredients and products, and with their continuous efforts in using the highest quality ingredients in their product range, yields the creation of superior dessert creations. Born in Indonesia, being trained the classical skills of patisserie in France, and settling and starting a brand in Melbourne, I can't wait to hear Christy's story. Hey Christy, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you so much, Sean, and thank you so much for having me here.
Hey, it's an absolute pleasure. Now, when we talked the other week, we probably talked for longer than I thought we were going to talk for, but it's almost a podcast in itself. But it was so great to learn more about your experience and how you got into the industry. You're such a passionate advocate for the industry as a whole. So how about we start out, you know, how you actually got into it and how the brand got started
in the hospitality industry itself. It's actually quite an accident. So I was a business consultant. So I was born in Indonesia, and I did my college in Singapore.
Okay.
I graduated with a bachelor in business administrations, and I went off to become a business consultant with IBM.
Mm-hmm.
So
with IBM,
yes, correct.
Wow.
So I was part of the blue team, you know, the management trainee.
Yes,
and we were trained to, at that time, global business service. IBM was the biggest consulting service in the world,
mm-hmm.
and so I worked there for 4 years, and I was really good at it, in the sense that I was really good at it, that I was just like pretty bored, you know, like,
yes.
So when I was bored, it's just like, I think in my blood that I want to be something, I want to be both competitive and artful at the same time.
Yes.
So I did marathon and I hurt my back, and eventually I couldn't do anything. So, but the boredom is still there, and I said, okay, let me do something. And I started to bake. So I self-taught myself, and I started to sell wedding cakes. I started to sell while still working in IBM.
Wow.
So like I'll knock off at like 6 p.m., 7 p.m. and I just put my bag and I start baking till a wee in the morning.
Gosh.
And to the point that it was so successful, the business, that I made as much money doing the cakes than as the youngest project manager.
Wow.
In Southeast Asia with IBM. Yes, at that time. And so eventually my mentor pulled me aside at a time. So all of us has a mentor, right? Like my associate partner. He called me and he said, like, okay, Christy, what do you want to do now? So you have two, you're on a branch, you know, like you're on a fork. So whether you go and take an MBA, he was the interviewing panel for Wharton University. So he said, like, just score your GMAT, you know, like, and I'll train you. You'll get there, get an MBA, and go for the next step. And that's what's the next step for consulting.
Mm-hmm.
Or do something about your business.
Yeah.
You know, like, be an entrepreneur, you know, like, if you do something about it. So I thought about it and I just felt like, oh, I don't think I have enough base. I don't think I have enough groundwork to do. Yes, I know how to run a business.
Yeah.
But I don't, from my experience being a business strategy consultant.
Yeah.
But I don't know about the product yet, which is baking. I was self-taught, you know, nothing much. So I said, like, okay, I need to do a bit of a soul searching, you can say, you know, like, and I need to go learn from the best.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to go to France.
And what made you make that decision to go to France?
why not
go somewhere closer to home?
That's the thing. It's like, you can call it like a soul searching. Basically, I was telling myself, all right, let's go to a place where I could immerse myself in it, concentrate in it without any outside noise, in a sense, preferably in a country where I couldn't speak the language. So that's that's quite crazy, right? And then I was like, awesome. that's a bit hard because like I speak Bahasa, I speak English, and I speak a little bit of Chinese. And I was thinking of like France. All right, let's go France. And then when I went to France, I was looking at the school as well, and they have, you know, you have Le Cordon Bleu, you have Oliver Bajard in Paris. And I went like, well, I'm going to burn all my saving if I ever be in Paris just because it's such a beautiful city.
Yeah.
So, no. And then at that time, Alain Ducasse, which is basically like the godfather of hospitality,
yes,
decided to open this school, which is for all the MOF, you know, the tricolor collar chefs, you know, like the best of the best of France to train for pastry. And they just opened this program.
Okay.
And in a little town called Issanjou, really, it's like around 5 hours from Paris.
Wow.
So I don't know why. I just went like, I'll go there. You think being a consultant, I will do a little bit more research? I think I was just like, I just wanna have a change of scenery. And I just went like, yeah. At that time, the program was 6 months. And I thought to myself, like, look, this is an experience that is, I know it's crazy, it's wild, but 6 months, if it's not for me, I could always go back.
Sure.
And I have this skill that turned out I'm still using till today, this consulting skill. So I'm like, yeah, why not? Let's just try it.
Yeah. And so how old were you at that time?
24. I was 24. Yeah.
That's ballsy. And did you know anyone in France?
No. Like I still remember when I went off to like we landed at Lyon Airport. I landed at Lyon Airport and was like, I know nobody. I don't understand the language. And I just have this map like crudely drawn from the school of like where to find the bus. It was insane. But looking back, I thought like, well, you know, that's the beauty of being young.
Yes.
I think
yellow, right? You're just going to take a risk, right?
You just got to take a risk. Yeah. And I just kept thinking that in my head, like, look, worst come to worst, I have something to fall back on. So like, I think, I was just like, let's just do it. I will not say that it's a risk in a sense, because the risk is kind of low.
Yeah.
If you really think of it.
Yeah. It's a good point.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's why I just did it.
So how long were you there for? So obviously you did 6 months of training.
Yeah, right? I did in the end almost 2 years that I was there. Yeah,
okay.
So almost 2 years. So then I went back. Then I met my partner there.
Wow.
Who's Australian.
Okay.
And I work from Issanjou. I graduated and I work in Paris. I worked in Ritz. And so he was on a work holiday visa, and then he sort of asked me like, hey, do you want to come back with me to Australia? So again, that same principle applied to my head, right? Like I'm still young, you know, and I haven't, I've seen, you know, Europe-esque sort of. And I thought like, let's go and try, you know, like if it's not successful, if it's not for me, now I know I could even go back to France if I want to.
Yeah, for sure.
So with that in mind, I'm just like, let's go and try. Yeah.
Right. So, okay. So you're in France for a little bit of time. Then you decide you want to come to Australia.
Yeah.
And you'd never been to Australia before, or you had?
I had, but that was like when I was 9, I think. All I can think of is just like Warner Brothers. So that's all. Gold Coast. That's all I could remember of Australia. Seriously, like kangaroo and things like that. So
yeah, right.
Never really... So went here again, blind, not knowing anyone.
Into Melbourne. Right.
And the best part was that my partner is like a regional country pumpkin. So it's also his first time to move to Melbourne. So both of us like...
So you're both in it together?
Both like know nothing, you know, yeah, Melbourne. Right. Yeah, that was pretty interesting now looking back, yeah.
So what did you do when you first came here, like work-wise?
So I applied for... a pastry chef position at Vidamont.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. And I remember that I got the job before I even have an apartment, you know, like my name. I stayed in this really small, not small actually, this big house that belonged to my partner's family's friend.
Right.
You know, and we were house sitting there. That was like a really big house. All you got to do is just like stay there and feed the cat.
Sounds good. Yes. Yeah.
So that's what happened. So I started there. So I come here, work at Vidmont.
Okay.
That's the first job that I had. Yeah.
And your partner's in the industry, obviously in the industry as well. Is he a dessert? Is he a dessert chef or
a pastry
chef?
Yeah, he's a dessert, basically pastry chef. We call we call ourselves pastry chef, even though we make desserts, not just pastry.
Yeah.
And now the business, we have the business together. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
I'm the fun part.
How did you? If we can go back, I'd love to talk about Vidmont. Like, how did you find that coming to that brand? I mean, that was one of the pinnacle restaurants in Victoria.
I'm not gonna lie, it's hard. It was hard because like I had the chance of being at both Vidmont and Jacques Raymond when I started.
Wow.
And bear in mind, I came from Paris and I work at L'Espadon, which is like the two Michelin star at the Ritz Hotel. Mm. And so when I went to Vidmont, I thought like, I know my game.
Yes.
I know my game. Mm-hmm. I've worked in fine dining restaurants, and this is the pinnacle of fine dining in Melbourne. So I thought, and the name is Vidmont.
Yes.
It's like French,
it's
right?
French,
I thought like, I'm in the zone. No.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Completely different. And then like even till now, till today, I realized that we are at a different, still at a different page, like the culinary scene in Australia and in Europe, even like France or like UK, even dessert is a lot more behind. That's the way I feel it,
In Australia?
In Australia.
Interesting.
We're catching up, but we're still behind, the understanding on the reception towards dessert and what it is.
Yes.
So what considered plated dessert, what considered like petit gâteau, even when you consume dessert and the reason why you consume dessert, still not, it's still kind of different. I found out that in Australia, people eat dessert because, or like cakes, because they celebrate something.
Sure.
Right. I mean, at least in Asia, where I was born and raised and in Europe where I went, people eat cake because it's Tuesday. It's something like that. So that's something that is still, I think that is a bit different, and that's because of that. When I went and started at Vidmont, I just went and looked at the plate and I went like, it's like 10 years after now. So I was like, I just felt that we were trying a bit too hard.
Right. To be something that it wasn't, or was it trying to be what Europe was and therefore people weren't understanding that, or?
We were trying too hard in terms of like the texture and the taste, And then put it this way. When I was, I kept telling people, yes, I'm classically trained in France, and that has a lot of positives, and I do realize that also have a lot of negatives.
Okay.
The positive that I see it is the lesson to respect your ingredients and the lesson to respect taste and texture. Mm-hmm. So which means that doesn't mean more ingredients, it's better. Doesn't mean that you use so many techniques that it's better. It's respecting of the taste and the palate. Mm. And sometimes it comes from the simplest thing.
Yes.
And being in France also, we were really spoiled with the amount of fruit, the fresh fruit and vegetable and things like that.
Yeah.
So for them, like if it's good, don't process it.
Yes.
So that's what
refine
I meant.
Refine it a bit.
Yeah, we were trying a little bit too hard that on a plate. I was quite confused that you can have like 12, 13 components.
Yeah.
And I was like, is that how it is here? And going forward, now that I look back to my journey from then till now, I went through that journey as well, where I thought like, oh, maybe if I put 13 things on my plate, that's what people want. And I did. And
right.
Refining myself again, and then now I kept finding myself going back again and again to the time that when I was in France.
Yes.
Instead of, I just keep going back to that and ask my question is like, is this actually apart from the noises around us, like this is the current technique, this is how it cools, would you be happy eating it on a Tuesday?
Yes.
That's basically my questions, yeah.
So if I'm to go a bit deeper here, like why do you think that was that you were trying to put 13 different elements or ingredients or different techniques on a plate mm-hmm. here in Australia where you weren't doing that in France. Do you think it's because, like, when people talk about what is Australian cuisine, it's a lot of different things now.
Yeah.
Do you think it's because of that and people don't have, you know, the sort of tram tracks that European countries do in saying this is how it is and this is how we're going to do it and don't deviate too much from that, and we just have a lot of more opportunity for experimentation in Australia, so therefore
I guess the biggest thing is that we're trying to find our identity.
Yeah.
You know, and like everybody who's gone through this, like I said, even myself put 13, just think of it like a teenagehood, right?
Yes.
And you put so many things on yourself and then it's just trying to find what works for you, and because you're trying to impress
mm-hmm.
at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So we are still new and we're still, back then, you know, like in the culinary industry, we were still new. We were still trying to impress ourselves by showing that, oh, this is a technique that we learned, like what you said, technique we learned yeah. from the UK, from France and things, and just try to mush it together on a plate.
Yes.
But by doing so, you're just sort of like, so who are you, you know, in
yeah.
that sense. And that's what I found about these 12 or 13 different mm. things on a plate. And
mm-hmm.
And I just realized, like, that was confusing. Sometimes I look back to, like, what I did, you know, 7-8 years ago, and I say, like, why did I do that?
Yeah.
Because, just because I can.
Yes. You know,
like, yeah.
So how did you get that clarity? And understanding that you needed a refinement and a less is more kind of approach, I suppose.
I think it's time.
Right.
You know, like, eventually it's time as
yes.
well.
Yes, yeah.
And then, you know, like, at that time, everybody wants to be different, and that's why... Well, if you put 10 things, I'm going to put 11. So I'll be different, okay? So like it's kind of like that.
Yes.
But there is a saying, you know, like I think I got a lot better ever since I opened Glace. Mm. So like mm-hmm. like 4 years ago.
Okay.
Focus will be 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a saying that, and it's also happened, I believe it so much coming up from Indonesia as well, that sometimes limitations increase, like, creativity. It helps creativity.
Yes.
And when I started Glace, obviously it's a pastry shop, right? Mm. Like it's a dessert shop. So it's mm-hmm. not like a plated dessert where you can put 13 components and just your trip is just from kitchen and 10 meters to the table.
Yeah.
So there's a limitation to that. So first, it has to fit in something that is 7 centimeter tall. You know, like, yes. like open less and 5 centimeter wide, you know,
yes.
like, and it has to fit in that, and it has to survive people going it back to home,
mm-hmm.
whatever mode of transportation they take, you know,
yes.
like bus, tram or mm-hmm. car. So with that being limited, it makes you think of like, what can I take out? You know, like I
yeah.
obviously cannot fit 10 or 12. So
mm-hmm.
what do I take out without taking out the experience of this dessert and without taking out what I want to convey
yeah.
in this dish.
Yeah.
So, and I did. And it was now, because of that, it just makes me realize that like, hey, I don't need 13 things in this. I just need 3 or 4.
Wow.
And still manage to express myself and mm-hmm. convey myself,
mm-hmm.
if not better and clearer than I did before.
Yeah, right.
So now, even now when people ask me to like, oh, Chrissy, can you do a plated dessert?
Yes.
I will not deviate more from that now, you know,
right.
like I will just like take some of the cakes, some of the combinations that I know work,
mm-hmm.
work really, really well and go from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So because I just think like, I'm not going to impress anyone.
No,
I'm not going to try to impress.
Yeah,
anyone.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
just going to like, because I know it works. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's that understanding that you actually know it works right now because
yeah.
you've had the experience. So how did Glace come about? Obviously 4 years ago, but how did you make that decision with your partner as well that you wanted to do your own store?
All right. So it's quite funny. I never really ventured this in detail, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean like maybe it's a time I should commemorating like almost, you know, that this been a while.
Yep.
So everybody's been asking me, like, why don't you start a business? Why don't you start a business?
Okay.
You know, because then I become the head chef for Om Nom Dessert Bar. I mm-hmm. opened and had it for since 2013.
Right.
Yeah, since 2013 to 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I went to MasterChef all the way through for every year.
Right.
I knew everybody in the industry already, you know, and even my parents, like, why don't you try this, you know, like, and I was just sort of a little bit scared, I guess, at
of
that
course.
Time.
Yeah.
Because the fact is that, like, again, I'm not an Australian. I was, you know, I'm not an Australian. I
yep.
still felt like I was an outsider.
Interesting.
All I knew about this place was just the industry.
Right.
Which is now that having a business, well, you need to know a lot more
yes.
than just the industry. You need to know the people, actually. You need to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just felt like I'm still a bit blind in that. So I was mm-hmm. still just unsure about myself. Da, 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 da. Just mm-hmm. basically finding a reason for myself to do so. So eventually then I moved on. Instead of opening my business, I moved on to Langham Hotel. So I become the executive head pastry chef over there.
Amazing.
Yeah, they basically made a position for me. To mm-hmm. be there, and I was there for 3 months. Like I from the beginning, I just basically tell them it either it's gonna work or it won't.
Sure.
So 3 months, and I went
and
like,
it didn't, oh, yeah.
it's not gonna work. So I'm just going to quit.
Yes.
And you think by then that I would start my own business, right?
Yes.
I mean, like it's by then.
That's
I
the pinnacle
would,
moment.
Yeah, that's
yes.
pinnacle moment. You know, like but I was offered a positions for being a consultant as well for this company.
Interesting.
Like, not going to mention it because, like, it's people will know. So being a consultant for this company, and I just realized that people, that's also when I realized people don't understand what we want to do.
Mm.
People still don't understand. They said, like, oh, we want to do this, we want to do this. And then when I said, this is what we do, no, it is not that. Like, it reminds me, there are still so many times also my friends who come from France and become pastry chef over here, I told them that people still don't understand us. To the point that I got sacked.
Right.
Yeah. I got sacked as a consultant. Never in my life, right? I'm an overachiever, crazy Asian. You can say that. Like, it's in my DNA, you know?
Okay.
Like, it's just in my DNA.
Yeah.
So never in my life I would ever thought of getting fired.
Yeah.
From a position. So because I basically tell them, this is not how you do it. This is not how you do this, da 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 da.
So you're just too opinionated?
Yeah, basically.
Right.
I'm too opinionated, but you hired me to tell you how to run
yes.
a dessert
yes.
place, which I have successfully done for a
yes.
long time.
Yes.
But then because it's not what you think it is, then I got fired, right?
Right.
So I remember it was my partner's birthday and I got fired after working for like more than 12 hours in that place that day.
Yes.
And I just look at him and I went like, okay, if people don't understand, maybe I have to show them.
Nice.
And that's when I called my dad and I said like, you know what? I think I'm going to start my own business. And he was like, well, about time.
If you know your parents are saying you should start a business, then it's probably
yeah, it's
the right thing
time,
to do.
You
yes.
know, like I think that's the shove that I need.
Mm.
So sometimes, you know, like you well, it came like this. When I got fired, I was like so angry. I was in denial. I was just like being angry, being sad, being offended. And then eventually like, what do you want to do with it? And
yeah.
then do you... And then I went like, well, I could sue.
Yeah.
To be
sure.
honest, at that time, or I could do something for myself. And
right.
I decided to do something for myself.
Right. So how did it come about? Obviously, the first site was in Windsor?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, that's the kitchen and our first shop. Yeah.
Right. So you guys went actively looking for sites, or did someone offer that to you? Or
No. I went actively looking for sites.
Yeah,
and
nice.
Even looking back now, you know, like we learn a lot. I learned a lot, you know, like so much, because at that time I still told my partner like, oh, okay, don't worry. You know, like he had his job still at that time. And I said like, I can do it myself if I want to.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me and he went like, okay, chefy, he called me chefy. Right? Like, well, chef means boss in France. So
yes.
I'm glad he knows. So. I'm just joking. But he said like, well, chefy, look, I mean like, I'm going to be as involved in this business as
yep.
possible because I care about you and I love you and I'm in the industry as well, so might as well, you know, like. And he said, if you don't want me to be here as the owner because you just still want to learn a little bit, it's like, I'll work for you, you know, like. And eventually if it doesn't work, I can always work for someone else.
Yeah, of course.
So but I learned a lot. I learned so much from finding the site, doing the lease as well and the building. So
yeah.
That I was still a baby. Like, I didn't even understand at all. Now looking back, I'm like, what the hell was I doing?
Was it a kitchen before?
No, it was just a concrete. It was just plain. It was really, it was nothing. It was nothing
what,
there.
What made you pick that particular location?
Well, first of all, it's because it's close to the city,
yes,
in a sense.
Most definitely.
Yeah, so I've always had a thought in my head that I'm not going to just stop at one shop.
Right.
And I want to expand to a little bit more mm-hmm. than one shop.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to find, and that place was quite big.
Yes.
Area.
Yeah, it's a big area.
And I need a kitchen.
Yep.
And that's just accessible to everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that place already had the permit for food, which is like, oh, had a permit for
really?
Food, but there's nothing inside. Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
So the developer who built it basically wanted it to become a cafe.
Right, okay. Okay.
Yeah, because okay. underneath.
Hence the size.
Yeah, hence yeah. the size.
Okay.
Yeah, but we decided to just make it. Now it's mostly just the kitchen.
Right.
There. Yeah. We're growing, so majority is just the kitchen there.
Okay. So how did it come about that the second site came in Emporium in the city?
Well, the site, that one was Zumbo.
Yes.
You know, like the site was belonged to Zumbo.
Mm.
And I remember that I was just walking along and then at that time, I think Zumbo announced that he closed everything a day before Christmas or something, 2 days before Christmas.
Yeah.
Like really, really. He announced it and I just looked at my partner and went like, you want to take his spot, you know, like, and then he went, which one? The one in Emporium.
So yeah.
Are you mad? I don't know. Let's just find out, you know,
yeah.
like, and I didn't know anybody. I didn't know the leasing manager. I didn't know anyone. I actually called the concierge, you know, like in Emporium, and I went, hey, I want to ask about the space upstairs.
You called the concierge.
Yeah. Like, and I was like, who's the leasing manager? And they gave me the name and I emailed this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he came back to me on the 27th of December, like the right. day after Boxing Day.
Okay.
I was like,
was super
let's
keen.
Get this,
yeah,
you know,
okay.
let's get this. So
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it just happened like that. It happened so quick. And then that's also, and I also learned from there, you know, like I believe that for every lease that I signed, every build, every fit out that I did, I learned something.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how it come about. It's just something that just popped and I just asked, why not?
Yeah, because it's a very seems different like, site.
Seems like the story of my life. Something pops. I'm like, why not?
Feels right at the time.
Yeah,
because yeah, it's a very the Emporium site's a very interesting site. You know, like going upstairs and that kind of stuff. Like, but everyone can see you. Like, it's the positive thing. It's such an open
well,
kind of venue, right? As being a kiosk.
Yes, and
yeah.
that's what I think the benefit is being
yeah.
a kiosk. And you know, the first one was a shop, and I realized that like. And that's also why I said I still live in a bubble. I still live
right.
in a box where it was like in France, everybody has a shop, right?
Yes.
And working also, having worked at destination places before that, which means you go there, like I said, you go there because it's Tuesday or you go there because like, you know, you feel like having a cake, you know, and
yeah.
things like that.
Mm.
And being also having opened like Om Nom at that time and working in like destination restaurants. So I always had experience being a destination place. So I
yeah.
thought like wherever I am, someone's going to come.
Yes.
But then I forgot, this is where I were circling back to what I said before, where you need to also understand the market really well.
Yes.
And what you are offering, you know, like at the end of the day, I realized, okay, I'm selling dessert. It is a very impulse purchase.
Mm.
It's not like if you go, so all along I've worked in restaurants, in which is a destinations because that and it's completed by dessert.
Yes.
But when you just sell dessert
yes.
and you don't have a big name for yourself yet, you really need to be at a prominent place.
Mm.
Let's say that. And
that's
it has
point.
To be in an impulse. It is impulse purchase too. So
yes.
even let's say that I put it at a shop in a busy area, you know, you still have to be committed to go in, you know, to put your foot into the shop. And
yep.
because some people feel like, no. So many people pass our shop and just looking in because they don't feel like they want to commit to buy.
Yes.
So that's why I said like, kiosk. All right, let's get a kiosk. Because
yep.
at least people walk past and see what we sell.
Mm-hmm.
And I negotiated with Emporium, with Vicinity, that I want to have that space, but I must have seats. Because also, this is cake. You
yes.
know? Like people,
you want to sit down and enjoy
you
it.
You want to sit down to enjoy it. Even if it's just 10 seats, I don't care. I want to have seats.
Mm.
And I want to sell coffee.
Yes.
You know, and they went like, "Are you crazy? You know, like, why do you want to sell coffee? Because T2 just right in front of you, you know, fucking tea and things like that." I was like, "I don't care." You know, like, this is when I put myself in my customer's point of view. I just shop for the whole entire day. I just need something sweet, you know. I just need to sit down with whoever that I was shopping with. I just need to straighten my leg is one thing. I just want to have tea and cake. And that's what we got. So that's basically what the agreement that I had with them. And I know it's quite different. And people say like, oh, it's a kiosk. It's not like a shop. I mean, like, hey, at the end of the day, I'm still a business person. I'm looking for money here. Yeah.
No? Yes, exactly. Yes. We're not here to make friends. We're here to make money. So is that sort of, because obviously, you know, you've said a couple of times like the two shops are very different. Like, is that part of your plan if you want to grow more sites? Is that you want to be, you know, a kiosk type environment in shopping centers? Okay.
Yeah. Not necessarily shopping centers, but I mean, but looking at the way Melbourne is going right now, it's still the place where there is a high foot traffic.
Yes.
And we are pushing the envelope enough for people to start understanding what we are doing and appreciating the price that we are paying right now.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, in the culinary industry, I still feel that we are still underrepresented in dessert to be a destination thing, to be, again, going back to like a Tuesday thing.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Unless that you are there on people's face.
Mm-hmm.
So until that happens, the strategy means that we have to be there. We have to bring ourselves to as many faces as possible.
So you have to be in high traffic areas.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, understand. What's been like a couple of the biggest challenges being a small business owner? I mean, obviously you've been around for 4 years having these, you know, now two stores.
Yeah.
We throw in COVID in there and stuff like that as well. Like, obviously we almost last had three. Year was a challenge. Right, okay.
Yeah. Okay. We almost had three. I pulled out like just at the beginning of COVID. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That's probably maybe a blessing.
That's a blessing. Yeah. You know, but it also means that our growth stunt, you know, like it's what our 5 years plan is pushed.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, when we want to restart it again, the question is like, when do you want to do it?
Yeah.
I guess that's a big, like, COVID is a big challenge, but believe me or not, The hardest challenge was to start being an immigrant, you know, like who's not really understanding the rule of the games, you know, and things like that. It is quite hard. And then because, like I said, I might know the product, I might know how to run the business, but I don't know how to build, you know, I don't know how to fit out. I don't know what's the deal with like building things here and things like that. Even the taxes to learn about things, you know, like, so that on top of each other, the rules of like outgoings, council rates and things. So it took me a while to grab my head around it.
Sure.
So I think that's quite the challenge, because once you understand that, even during COVID, you could mitigate your losses in a sense and mitigate your whatever plan, you know, that you have to pull back.
Sure.
Yeah.
How did you learn all those skills? Were you looking back on your previous history as a consultant with IBM and thinking that as the way of strategy, and you sort of learn all those other sort of nuances about Australian tax and property and that kind of stuff as you went? Or did you lean on some different people? Or?
So I just think that lesson number one that I can keep telling people is like, you need to prioritize, you know, and you need to prioritize your resources. And the resources, we're not just talking about money, but it's also your time.
Sure.
Right? And then once you do that, you need to learn also to delegate. So that's the two things.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is that, you know, when you come in to the hospitality business, and like what I said just now, it's very noisy. Especially in Melbourne, right?
100%.
Everybody wants to be different. Everybody wants to be the most Instagrammable. Everybody wants to be the loudest, right? But you have this finite amount of resources, both in time and in money. So if you have this much amount of money, initially I spent like, oh, okay. Bear in mind, being someone who was in MasterChef before and I was in multiple, you know, like radios to interview me. I was in so many gigs and things like that. People pay for whatever, you know, like I asked for and things.
Yes.
So it initially in my head, the first thing that I will say, like I will told myself is that, okay, let's invest quite a lot in marketing, you know, like and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hire like a simple accountant to do to do my taxing.
Sure.
And it was a year, almost a year later, that my tax was all over the place. Like I was catching up. Like I basically spent coffee to catch up everything, you know, like on my reconciliations and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I realized that, like, hey, having a look at it, if you really think of it, if I'm going to spend $6,000 a year, let's say, you know, like now the importance of spending $6,000 in marketing and $6,000 in tax, sorry, in accountant and good accountant, I'm like, I spend it on an accountant.
Yes.
That's what I will
just... peace of mind, isn't it?
It's not only that, but when I speak to my current accountant and also then understand your resources, which is your time, and sometimes also like your capacity to understand this, understand which one you can delegate and which one you can actually control yourself, you know, like, and having that knowledge. So I remember I called this accountant and then he came to me and I said like, okay, your bookkeeper going to lodge everything for me, but he's going to sit down with me for at least like half a day and he's going to explain to me how to reconcile, how to do everything from the scratch.
Nice.
So, and then I'm just like, don't go easy on me. Just like...
Yeah, tell me how it is.
Tell me how it is. Tell me how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. So I did, my brain was like hot at that time. But I told him like, all right, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to reconcile everything. I'm going to do all my taxes, my POIG and everything like that. All you do is just do the wash, you know, like in every quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to tell me if I did something wrong and you lodge it.
Right.
You know, and then we have these conversations once every 3 months, sort of like what we're going to do next. Mm-hmm. And that helped me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That really helped me a lot to rectify what I did before, you know, like, and to understand the law and the country and things.
Yeah.
That's one. And then also like the building and everything like that. And when we were talking about the feed out for Emporium and even the third shop, almost the third shop, even though it didn't go through, we learned a lot in terms of like negotiating the building. But then that's also when it comes to my head and I went, okay, time. I need to do my accounting. I need to do so many things. At this time, I'm also consulting for, I'm an F&B consultant for this multinational group. Yep. I took that role.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at my partner and I went like, look, you have been very strong, you know, in the kitchen and in operational. I need to start delegating things. Yes. I know this is not your forte. I'm going to teach you how to do.
Yep.
You know, like the accounting. So he started to take over the accounting and then I'm going to basically make you my operational director, you know, like
right.
And you need to understand about the building as well, but the feed out. So when you, I just need to know, you need to explain to me in the plainest possible what is needed.
Yep.
And I can tell you, because then I'll be on a third party sort of like not in this, why I think that work and why I think it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So it kind of help, you know, like when you have not just your head buried in the sand.
Sure. You're actually giving it to someone else as well.
You're giving it to someone else. The benefit is that person learn as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do not have as many things on your plate.
True.
And gives you the benefit of being able to look into your business from a third party point of view.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think it's really, really important for some, like, you know, for business people, especially people who are really like need neck deep into their business to get someone else to look at it into the third, from a third party point of view. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's the benefit of, you know, consultants, right? But I think if your partner's doing that, it's understanding, you know, and him understanding, you know, the different parts of the business and different things that are in your head, you know, as you're thinking about scaling the brand too, right?
It's almost like I'm my own consultant.
Yes.
I'm my own business consultant.
Yeah, 100%.
So like you're in operation and then I'll tell you, you know, like looking at the outer world and then coming back in. And and I'm grateful for that because you need an advocate for your own business. You need a consultant for your own business. Yeah.
Absolutely. How do you stand out in a dessert market in Melbourne? You know, everyone thinks, you know, Melbourne's a massive market, but we're in Australia, like we're in a small market.
Mm.
And now in the last 10 years, like desserts have really upscaled in their quality and that kind of thing. So how do you stand out and be traditional and be classical and push the boundaries and do all those things?
So my mantra is like, you stay classic with your flavor.
Okay.
You know, you stay classic with your flavor. You stay classic with, I mean, when I'm saying classic, doesn't mean it's boring.
Yeah.
You know, like it goes back to the true flavor. If you have a really, if the season is really amazing, raspberry, or if this season is really amazing, like a mandarin or something, you stay true to that. You know,
yes.
Say what's in the season, what works. And be experimental in your presentations, mm-hmm. in your look.
Mm-hmm.
Just think of it like how we all want to, as people, right? Like we interact and things like that, that everybody just want a good insight, mm-hmm. but it's like how we present ourselves differently that makes it who we are.
Of course.
Right? So that's also how my cake's about. So I have a cake that looks like a rat, you know, like a ratatouille, you know, that looks like a rat with a chef's hat. I have a that looks like an ox. I have one that looks like a bear, you know, and mushrooms and things like that. So it's just the whimsical part comes in.
Yeah.
And it's something more than to meet the eye.
Interesting.
Because again, it's going back to that impulse thing, yeah?
Yes.
Like if you're in a kiosk, I have 5 seconds to grab your attention.
Absolutely.
Right? And so how do I make it and still not making it look tacky or kish?
Yeah.
So
there's a fine line, right?
Very fine line. Yeah, it's a very fine line to make it look like that.
Yeah.
So, and that's when I push the envelope. And then also the more, and I need to balance out something that catch people's eyes. So it has to catch your eye,
mm-hmm.
it, enough for you to stop whatever mm-hmm. you're doing mm-hmm. and look at it and read it and read the descriptions.
Yep.
And if the flavor is something that you know you like,
yep.
it's like you'll be interested to get it because like, hey, if I'm going to spend $14, you know, on a cake, but I don't know I'm going to like it or not, I'm not going to get it.
Yes.
But it's $14 and it's a let's say it's a raspberry chocolate and a coconut. Hey, I know I would like that.
Yes.
You know, so I know that I'm going to enjoy it. So that's one. So it has to taste something that is familiar
yes.
with a look that is different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how, and then second, like I said, it has to fit in that 7x5 centimeter kind of like shape.
Yes.
It has to be sturdy enough for people to bring home in summer and in winter.
It's a massive challenge.
Yeah. So, and then even the packaging, I have to think of the packaging, you know, mm-hmm. like the box and everything to make people that it is still cost effective for us.
Yeah.
And it's pretty enough for people like so they can carry around with it
mm-hmm.
and but holding these things, you know, like good.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things to consider. When people say, so what makes us stand out? It's not just the look. I think it's the whole it's the whole thing.
Whole experience.
It's the whole experience of and the whole thought that we put into a cake.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean, like we push the envelope. When I first started the business, I sold my cake for $10 a piece.
Right.
And then now we're at like $13.90.
Yes.
And nobody ever asked. You
Isn't
know,
it
like,
funny how that happens?
Yes. And then like in public holiday, I raised it by 15%.
Yep.
So, and I still remember when I first started, people said like, really? Someone's going to buy a cake for like $10?
Yeah.
Like this size.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nobody asked that because like you look at that cake and you went like, whoa, that's a lot of like technique and skill you need to use that. So
yeah,
righto, this is my money. You know, like
Do you think that's just understanding from consumers now that they watch things like MasterChef, or do you think it's because there is more dessert of fantastic quality in the market now that people can sort of understand? They're happy to go from $10 to what is now $13.90 for an amazing quality product?
A bit of everything.
Okay.
I mean, like even lockdown helps.
It
makes people like, you know, people have a minimum spending when they go, right?
Yep.
Like to restaurants, and then it's just helping them to teach like that. Hey, opening a hospitality business is not cheap, and they start to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
It's people start to see Instagram helps. Obviously, people start to see like what is there overseas, you know, and appreciate that we can have it as well in Melbourne. But all in all, I mean, like, I remember like my partner, he was eating our cake. We taste test our cake a lot, okay?
I bet.
We taste test our cake a lot. Like, that's how you know something's went wrong. He went like, all right, Chefy, where do you think you can get a cake the shape of ratatouille in Australia?
Yes, exactly. Nowhere. Yeah.
Yeah, so also because of that, that people look at it and went like, well, I'm not going to get that cake anywhere else. So like,
yeah,
if that's a price, that's a price. Because mm-hmm. you being on a position where I don't compare ourselves with anyone else, it is great. It's amazing. It's it's also something that keeps us going. Like, okay, what's next? What's next? We have to keep reinvent ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So the notion that we are competing with other pastry chefs, something that I don't feel like that. No, we're just you find your niche and stay there.
How do you do your ideation on new products? Is it a lot of drawing and all that kind of stuff? Yeah, right.
Yes, a lot of drawings, because even the process, right? We have to understand that too.
Yeah, of course.
So, in a way that if I want to make the cake looks like a rat, like a ratatouille, it has to be something that is quick enough for my team to produce like 200 of them at one go.
Great point.
Right? I mean, like, I cannot, if you go to France, let's talk even on labor costs. In France, like when I work in France, the salary of like, this is like ages ago, right? This is like 2010. The salary of a sous chef over there was 2,100 euros a month.
Wow.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like I know it's definitely changed now and things, you know, but even comparatively to Australia, it was still nothing, you know, like, but the price of a cake, you know, over there, if you eat, and this is something that I hope we can do eventually one day here.
Yes.
If you take away and you eat in, it's different price.
Yeah.
So if you take away, it's like €7, it's like $14. And if you eat in, it's €13.
Yes.
So that's massive difference. And people like, that's fine. That's how it goes. But their salary is a lot less than us. So that's why, I mean, like, I cannot have, when I was in Ritz, the brigade was 14 of us, 14 pastry chefs, right? It's not going to happen here.
Yeah.
So how do I get the maximum, you know, result, but still respecting the labor, you know, like the labor law in terms of like the money and also the work and things like that. My guys come in work at 8 a.m. and knock off at 4.
Yeah.
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 So like at most like at 5, you know, so it's still pretty good. 9 hours, like
that's a great day
that they have to do. And they got their night times and things like that. They got their public holidays. So it's all about also organizing. So internally, so you have the skills to produce this, but you need to also have the skill to organize to get there, you know, like,
of course.
how to produce it, the plan and everything. And that is something that both my partner and I took this many years to sort of fine tune and to get there. So every time I start something, I develop the look. I'll develop the look of it, you know, and things like that, and I'll pass it to my partner, which is, he's really amazing also with flavor.
Okay.
And
that's handy.
Yeah, so he developed the flavors. So that's what happened. He will develop the flavors.
Okay.
And I said, like, this is what I wanted to look.
Yes.
And I think this is how you can make the inside. This is the inside. Da, 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 da.
Interesting.
And he come up with the flavor, and then he give it back again to me, you know, because he has to be able to replicate it. It's like a Chinese whisperer. If I make something, he replicate it. He has to teach to the guys, you know, like, and has to look the same.
Yes.
And he replicate it, and then he will give me his feedback. Okay, like, oh, to make it look like that, why don't we do this, like this, like this? And then I will taste it, and I was like, why don't we change the taste like this and this? So we're really a team. We're
That's
very,
great.
Very great team, yeah.
That's awesome.
But to get there, yeah, a few tears.
It's always tears to greatness.
Yeah.
Has the events of last year made you think differently about the business by way of like how many days you trade or like your hours of trade or how many staff you have on and the product range you might have?
Yeah, for sure.
In what way?
Not so much, I think, in a city one for the trading. You know, like for the trading, we stick to it in a city. Even when it was quiet and things like that, we still opened. If the center set were open till 9, we will open till 9, you know, and things like that. But the one in Windsor, let's say, because the surrounding of the areas, there's so many rentals, you know, and because of COVID, you know what happened. A lot of people went back to their country, or they went back to their parents' place or things like that. So it's just, and the dynamic of the suburbs changed.
Yes, dramatically.
Yes. So when it's in a, and like I said, when it's a shop, when it's a destinations kind of thing, when something like that change, you change your shop, your opening hours. So I just realized now, like, all right, so let's just open until 5 p.m.
Yep.
You know, and things we don't have, before that we opened till 10 p.m.
Wow.
And then we went like, it's not necessary. This is like something that we need to change because of the dynamic change. Even the safety, you know, of everything changed, you know, like, and then I just said like, no, I'm not going to put some guys there to stick till like, to sit till 10 p.m. only to make like $200, $300 extra.
Yeah.
You know, we can make the most of it in the daytime.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I did that for the city. We closed when it's, even though they technically said like, oh, you can still do takeaway and things like that. But let's face it, we are in a shopping center.
Who's coming to the city to do that?
Yeah. We're in a shopping center. If all the retails around our shop shut, there's no point.
Yep.
That, but the moment that we were allowed to open, we're open.
Yes.
As long as we can. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So my last question to you, Christy, is like, what are you looking forward to in the next sort of 12, 24 months? Obviously, you said at the start of the podcast, like you were going to do this third store and you decided not to do that. You've got two great sites. You're doing really well. You're consulting as well.
We're going to do the third store. But I mean, like being a consultant, you know, like, and also looking at the industry as a whole, not just like microscoping it at dessert, but also like the industry as a whole. I'm quite bullish of the next 24 and 36 months.
Great. You know,
it's going to be a roller coaster. So, but the spending and the confidence, it's just because there's like the flow of money is trapped. You know, here in Australia, right? And people aren't going anywhere. So they need to spend it at one way or another. Yes, there is going to be a rotation, so of like where they're going to spend it at, but there's money to spend and money to spend, money to earn.
Agreed. In a sense.
So, and this is before, and also like what we discussed just now about like the fact that they understand the price now. They start to understand the price. And that's brilliant. That's teaching people to do it. And this is before like the tourists and the students came back. So I'm quite bullish at that department.
Yep.
But what's for sure for the next 24 to 30, 20, at least immediately for the next 12 months, there will be quite a shortage of staff.
Yeah.
You know, I think everybody knows that.
Absolutely.
I think that is going to be a problem. But the benefit of being small business owners, you know, like is that you are used to rolling up your sleeve and doing things yourself.
Yeah.
So when there's nobody there to do the shifts in Emporium, like to make coffee and wipe table, I'll be there. You know, like that's not something that I'm worried about to do. You know, so I guess the trend for the next 12 months is for people to roll up your sleeve, go back to basics, start to look into yourself. What this is a good time to stock take of the skills you do not have and improving it at a time you were given the time to do so, that when the time when it's going to get busy again, and it will, you're well prepared for it. Yeah, stock take on your skill, stock take on your like your the way your supply chain, the way you do your products, you know, like and things like that.
Get your operations right.
Get your operation right. Get ready, because like if there's anything that is trialing, will be this time where it's like stop, go, stop, go, stop, go. And if you can survive that, you're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally agree. And then you'll scale.
And you scale, exactly.
I can't wait to do more stores. This is so exciting. I'm glad we're talking to this part of your journey, because I know it's going to be, it's just a fait accompli, right?
Thank you.
So thanks for being on the podcast today.
Thank you. Thanks, Sean.
What's the best way that people can find out about Glass A and visit you guys?
Well, I mean, like, there's Windsor. There's the shop in Windsor. There's the shop in Emporium. A third shop is coming up. We're still scouting for some. We have some few spots that we're looking at.
Nice.
The best way, of course, through, like, our Instagram. I mean, like, that social media. That's actually the skill that I'm trying to improve right now. You know, like...
It's tricky, right?
Yeah, on a digital marketing site. But you never stop growing. And then, that's the area.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Cool. Thank you so much, Sean. Have a good day.
My pleasure. Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of Principal Hospitality, the podcast. I hope you really enjoyed the episode. As always, please comment, like, and share this podcast with your friends in the industry. We are making this content with the industry in mind, so we really appreciate your feedback and sharing it along. Thanks as well to our major supporter, the largest family-owned and operated hospitality supplier in Australia, Chef's Hat, where the industry shops. And if you don't know us at Poe, Sash, my co-founder from Principal Design, has one of the best design agencies in Australia. So if you're looking for anything around strategy, branding, digital design, wayfinding, and graphical design, then you can find them at principaldesign.com.au. And myself, Open Pantry Consulting, for anything to do with systems and processes to make your business run smoothly. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Chef Tat for supporting us. And until next time, stay safe.